This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh, well, finally, after months and months of heat, with temperatures over 90 degrees almost every single day, it is just wonderful to know that we have a cold wave coming our way. And I think tomorrow we're going to actually be able to wear a jacket outside. It's going to be, I think, in the 60s even. So this is really exciting. And that puts us in the mood for November, which is, of course, the time for Thanksgiving Day. And I am, my brother, who is in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, reports that they are expecting their first snowfall this coming Sunday. So we're all now starting to think about Thanksgiving. And so I want to bring you a very special book that I hope you will get. And you have time now to order it so that you can get it in time to have it at your family dinner. And with all of your relatives, you can send it out all across the country. It is a wonderful book, and so I have a wonderful story here to tell about this book. I'm very happy that my guest today has written this wonderful book called Thankful. It is such an appropriate book to review at this time and to talk to the great author, award-winning author Eileen Spinelli. Hi, Eileen, are you there?
Yes, Patsy, hi. It's nice to talk to you.
Well, I'm so happy to talk to you. I love your book. Well, all of your books are great, but Thankful, it has to be, and I'm sure will become one of the favorites of all children because it is delightful. Yeah, it's one of those books where you will never be sorry to hear a kid say, read it again, because it's, we can read it over and over. It's just, you have written such a lovely little book that has so much charm. And I think it's just delightful.
Well, I love the illustrations.
Oh, they are beautiful.
Archie Preston did the artwork, and when I saw the book, I was just overjoyed because they have such a tender, endearing quality to them.
They work beautifully with your words. He obviously a very, very clever illustrator. And of course, you have a great publisher in Zonder Kids. They have
Absolutely.
Such high quality work.
Right, right. They're great to work with.
Well, I every time I get one of their books, I'm just thrilled because they are always such top quality. And of course, they have the best writers, and you among them.
Thank you.
I know you've won so many awards. I love your name, by the way. My favorite aunt was named Eileen, and it's not a name that you hear very often anymore. But I think it's such a nice name. Now I know, of course, you're an award-winning author, and of course your husband's an award-winning author.
He's out for a walk right now.
I was thinking after, I don't know why I didn't have both of you on, because I'll have to have him another day.
Right.
Give up some of his secrets, because he has written some amazing things.
He is a wonderful writer.
He is. And I know he's inspired you, and well, I think just about everything inspires you. You're the kind who you see something and that other people might overlook, and you could just make a little poem out of it or a book out of it. It's amazing.
Well, I do. I have my moments, Patsy, when I don't have an idea in my head, and that can be a scary time. But I do keep a notebook, so that's helpful. And sometimes you just need a break, and so I do other things like read or I'll go for a walk or watch an old movie or hang out with the grandkids. But, I wish I had one idea after another. It might seem like I do because I've been writing a long time. But sometimes I don't have an idea, and that can be a discouraging time.
But as you said, you take a walk, you look around,
right.
And there's, I tell people that, if Kafka could write about a cockroach,
right.
Anybody can. You can always find something to write about, right?
Right. And so, sometimes it's helpful if an editor asks for something, or someone says, "Gee, do you have a book about Christmas or Thanksgiving or Halloween?" And then that gives you a little springboard to bounce from.
Of course, thankful is ideal for Thanksgiving, but I think it's a year-round book because
I hope so.
It really is. It's so beautifully written with such simple rhymes, and yet they're unusual. They're not expected, and
right.
So it's sort of the unexpected that pops out at you and makes it so amusing and so really it's a heartwarming book.
Well, thank you. It's tricky to write a rhyming book because it reads, or it should read, so, it should flow, and so it sounds easy because it's easy to read. But actually, for me, it's the most challenging thing I do is when I do a picture book in verse. It's very, very difficult. You need to avoid a forced rhyme. You need to not have your rhyme so predictable, or to use a cliche like cat and mat. And so sometimes it takes even a whole afternoon to come up with one couplet that flows. So the rhyming picture books are difficult to write, even though they feel easy to read.
Yeah, you've been writing for a lot of years.
A lot of years.
A lot of years. I don't know. Were you ever rejected in the beginning?
Oh, I'm still rejected.
No.
Absolutely. It comes with the territory. Like if you're a carpenter, you're going to bang your thumb with a hammer. If you're a writer, you're going to be rejected. And not as often as I was, but definitely, the rejections come to everyone.
And that's what I was just at a writer's meeting yesterday, and we were talking about it, and I said, that exactly what you said. It comes, and you just have mm-hmm. to keep going.
Right, right. So, it's the perseverance that gets you past that. I think if I had stopped writing after my 100th rejection, then a lot of the books I've written wouldn't have been done. You just keep going. I think one thing that helps that is there's a quote that I love, and I have it on my desk. I don't know who said it, but it's really wise, and it says, "Bring love, not ambition, to your work."
Oh, and that's great.
Isn't that great? Because, if ambition comes last, but if you bring love to your work, I just think magic happens in a way that it doesn't when you're trying to figure out the trend and what's popular and what people want. I think if you bring love to your work and just simply write what you love, love what you're doing, love your reader, love, be gentle with yourself when you're working, I think good things happen.
Well, in this book where you, as I said, you come out with unusual people to be who are
right.
thankful for things
because right.
because it is important that children see that there are all types of people and all sorts of things to be thankful for.
Right, right. And not only thankful to God for all the blessings, but thankful to one another. And I think we don't articulate that as much as we might, how often we're pleased about something or grateful that someone did something for us, something very simple, and we don't say the thank you, but I think we all appreciate hearing that something we've done has pleased someone or helped someone, and I think it's a good idea to remember to articulate that, especially in the world today, to tell people how grateful we are for the things they do for us.
And for simple things, it's wonderful.
Right.
I love the line, "The waitress is thankful for comfortable shoes."
I was a waitress, so I know that firsthand.
So was I. So I remember that feeling. And when you are doing something like that, when you're a waitress or whatever, you do sort of hone in on that one thing that really keeps you going all day.
It's hard to deliver mail or a tray of food if your feet hurt.
Well, in some ways, it reminds me of I was talking, I interviewed not long ago our new poet laureate, Juan Felipe Herrera, and he was talking about being thankful for so many things. And, of course, one of the things he was most thankful for was he had a wonderful third grade teacher who inspired him. And, of course, his mother, who was a storyteller and who told him stories all the time. So he was thankful that she told him the stories. And then when he got to school, although, you know, he's Chicano and there were all those problems in those days with, you know, being a Chicano student. He got to school and there he had a third grade teacher who inspired him to write these stories that his mother's been telling him, to not forget them, to, you know, keep them alive. And so something like that, how wonderful one person or one book can have such an effect on a person. And I really like that idea of being thankful. And I know that I told him that I had a third grade teacher for whom I was not thankful because I'm left-handed, and she didn't believe in left-handedness.
Right.
And so she made me sit on my left hand for the first 2 months of my third grade semester. So it's important. It's important to find those things that one can be thankful for.
That's for sure.
Absolutely. So when were you, as a child, now, what was there a teacher who inspired you? Did you write young, or did you only start writing when you met your wonderful husband?
No, I started writing when I was 6 years old. And actually, I have someone to be thankful for. It was a librarian at our town library. Her name was Miss Armstrong. And on Saturdays, because we didn't have school libraries, I would go to the library, and we were allowed to choose 10 books, which was amazing to me, because in those days, my parents could not afford to buy books for me, except the little 25-cent golden books. So this librarian was just so loving. She would look for books for me during the week, and encourage me to read, and that's how I came to love words and books and decided then, when I was 6, that I wanted to become a writer.
Well, isn't that amazing when somebody does that for another person?
Right. She doesn't know because, I grew up and we moved away, and I've asked around locally if anybody remembers Miss Armstrong because I would love for her to know, but she doesn't need to know. She did it, and I remember her with great fondness. And sometimes we don't know the effect we have on people, but
it's important to plant that seed. Well, as a matter of fact, it was amazing. Juan Felipe Herrera told me that when he was notified that he had been selected U.S. Poet Laureate, he just took that office in September, he called his teacher, who is still alive.
Wonderful.
And now is 92 years old.
Wonderful.
And I thought, how amazing it must be for her to know that, you know, to live that long and to be able to live long enough to see one of her students become the Poet Laureate.
Yes. So that's absolutely, and lovely that he made that call.
Oh yeah, so he was so thrilled to be able to talk to her and involve her in the process too.
It was
a wonderful. Well, it showed, of course, what a wonderful person he is.
Absolutely.
So I think your books will have an effect on children. I think they will.
I hope so.
Will remember them. I find there's a lot of. Well, it's not just, you know, goodness and hope and encouragement in all of your books. I've had a chance to
you know, read quite a few of them. And I think you have that sort of runs through you of wanting to encourage and offer hope and goodness. So that's a nice theme.
Well, it is. I don't want to preach, but I hope that my, you know, what I care about in life, I hope that comes through to the readers, children and adults. Sometimes I think we think picture books are just for kids, but actually, I think I love picture books. I think they're for all ages, and I think, you know, each one is a small literary experience, and you know, and they're short, so we can enjoy them, you know, while the tea is boiling or while we're waiting for the cookies to be done in the oven. I think the art, the illustrations in these books are amazing, and I think, you know, I think they're for all ages, really.
Well, I agree, because as I said, it's the kind of book that I could read over and over and over myself. It's just every time I pick it up, I think, oh, I see another sort of, well, the illustrations are so full. So, you know, you can look at them many, many times. So I think that
and they make you smile, and don't we need smiles?
Definitely. I
right.
can. It's
yes.
something, you know, that we all need now. Mm-hmm. Are you working on other books right now? Picture books?
I do have a book I'm working on. It's a novel in verse.
Well, of course, you've got a big audience there for your books, right?
Do you mean in my family?
Yes, in your family.
We do. We have 27 grandchildren. That includes 5 great.
Wow. So I'm sure they enjoy having you read aloud to them?
The younger ones do, and then the older ones read aloud to their children. So, yes, we do have a big audience. I just did a signing at a local bookstore, and our granddaughter Lulu, who's 5, was sitting next to me watching me sign my books, and she said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm signing my name." She said, "I can sign my name, L-U-L-U." So maybe she'll become a writer.
Well, absolutely. I think if I was there, I would have asked for her autograph, because she sounds like she's going to be an up-and-coming writer. What's your advice for writers other than just stick to it? I mean, is there a specific when you write a book, a children's book, and you present it to the... Who do you present it to? The publisher?
To an editor.
And I can't imagine anyone editing your.
Absolutely. And I need an editor, because it's an editor just makes the book so much better, really. Just with suggestions, and I mean my books would not be near as good without an editor. A good editor is a gem. So yes, I do need an editor.
You do need an editor. And do you like to do book tours?
No.
No.
I'll tell you why. When I'm kind of a kind of an introvert and a little quiet kind of a person, and my idea of becoming a writer was that I would sit in a little cabin and drink tea and write. And now that I'm older, I'm not as nervous about talking, as you can see, or meeting people. But it was scary, because my nature is not to be marketing or pushing my books. My nature is to just sit somewhere quiet and write. And so I have to pull this little piece of myself that's more outgoing in order to do book tours and visits like that. And you can imagine how busy I am with my grandkids. And for me, at this stage of life, that kind of takes precedence. But I do know that young writers today do need to get out and help market their book.
Oh, they do. They do. It's
absolutely.
a different business now. That
it is.
They need to have a writer's platform, and they need to do all of this. You need to do Facebook, and you need to do...
Right. And I'm past that. I have a website, which is you know, exciting for me, but I wouldn't have known how to do it. But it's different today, and so I think people do need to get out and talk about their work and everything, and I know that the publishers appreciate that, because, you know, it's hard to sell books.
And what is your website?
It's Eileen Spinelli, all run together, .com.
Okay, so people can go there and find
Absolutely.
Out more about what are yes. you putting up on your website?
Well, I have a poem every month. There's writing tips and also contact information, so you can contact me on my website. Sometimes it helps to think out of the box a little, you know, to think about ways of doing things just a little different.
Well, that's good advice, because it's not an easy thing for young writers to sort of break
no.
through.
And right.
if they are lucky enough to with their children's books to find an agent mm-hmm. and then to get published, certainly by Zonder Kids. Now, Zonder Kids, they select your illustrator, or do you get to select your illustrator?
Oh, no, not with... it's always the publisher who selects the author, I mean the artist. I have nothing to do with that at all. And people will say to me, oh, you know, are you disappointed, or do you give the artist advice? And I'm thinking, I draw stick figures. I mean, I have no advice to give to an artist. So I think what happens is the art director at the publishers and the editor get together, I'm sure, and decide who best fits, you know, the spirit of the text. And so that's why every book that I do is different, because the text is different. So, but I'm always thrilled with the artwork. I'm just amazed at the talent of the artists in the industry today. They're amazing.
Well, you certainly latched on here with Archie.
Absolutely.
This is fantastic, fantastic work, and I'm sure that it was fun when you first saw his illustrations, when they showed them to you. How excited you must have been!
I was. They're just delightful. I just love the facial expressions.
Well, he captures.
he does. He does. And as I said, you know, you just look at them and you want to smile, and just joyful.
Well, Eileen, I think it's a wonderful book. It's a book to be thankful for, and I encourage all my listeners to get thankful.
Great, because you know. I need to shop for my grandkids.
Okay. Well, they have to go out and get this book, because
right.
it really is. It's a wonderful book, and at this time of the year, and I think at every time of the year. So, Eileen, I want to thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Patsy. You made it easy, my dear.
Okay, well, it was fun to talk to you. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
You too.
And what's
Hope
your specialty?
You
what, what's your favorite thing to make?
Pumpkin pie.
Pumpkin
and
pie.
And to eat, too.
Me too. That's
right,
what
And
I do it from scratch.
Oh, wow.
So
I do it from a canned pumpkin.
Oh, okay.
You
well,
boil the pumpkin. Bless your heart.
Well, I just love it. I'm originally from northern Michigan.
Oh, okay.
So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so,
big change.
Yeah, well, big change.
Right.
And so we had wonderful Thanksgivings up there, and in the cold weather. And as I said, I hope it won't be 90 degrees for us. But just have a wonderful, wonderful Thanksgiving. And thank you so much for thankful.
All right. Thank you, Patsy. And happy Thanksgiving to you and all your listeners.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Well, I think Eileen is just delightful. I love her laugh. And I'm holding the book in my hand right now and just touching it. It is, as I said, Zonder Kids. They are really, I think, the premier publishers of children's books, because the quality of their work is amazing. The book feels so good in your hand. It's so well done. And it's interesting, she mentioned the illustrator, whose name is Archie Preston. And there's a photo of Archie in the back of the book. And the story of his life is interesting, because he comes from England. And he came to America to be a stuntman. And he went to, of course, Hollywood, and he worked as a stuntman there. And he really enjoyed it, and he loved the work. But then he was injured badly in a fall during a shoot. And so he had to do something else. And so he drew upon the fact that he had always loved doodling around with art, and started drawing again. And this is his first, Thankful is his first book. And again, it's an example of somebody who, you know, he had to overcome a real challenge. And I know that he was very thankful for the opportunity to illustrate this book. And his illustrations are really delightful. I was really surprised when I discovered that it was his first book, because they are so, so brilliant. And I hope that you will get it. It's a wonderful book, beautifully done, and it's available at Barnes & Noble. And as a matter of fact, Barnes & Noble, we're going to have Karen Didson back here in November to talk about the books that are available at Barnes & Noble, and also, of course, at Amazon. And it's called Thankful, and it's by Eileen Spinelli, and it's a really great book. In a few minutes, we're going to go to commercials, but before I do that, I want to also remind you that it's too late for the Big Sur workshop, which is the workshop for anyone who is working on a children's book, and I hope that you will consider. They do have a waiting list, and so you might try to get on the waiting list. You never know if somebody cancels, because if you are writing a children's book, especially an illustrated book, the Big Sur workshop is the perfect place for you, because all of the best, the very best agents for children's books participate in this event, and it's just a wonderful opportunity, and it's called Big Sur Workshop. You can look it up. And meanwhile, of course, if you register before the end of this month for the San Francisco Writers Conference, which is in February, you will have a big discount. And I, again, recommend that one for anyone who's working on young adult or any other type of book. The San Francisco Writers Conference is the place where you, I think it's the best conference of its kind, because there you really get to meet the best agents from all over the world, they coming from England. So you have agents who are interested in finding new talent, and it's a great opportunity for you to meet people. So think about doing that one, signing up for that one, which is going to be February 18th. And the discount will, of course, last now through until October 31st. So register for that. And speaking of October 31st, I just want to remind you that Carol J. Perry is going to be my guest for Halloween. She was born on Halloween Eve in Salem, Massachusetts. And her wonderful cozy mystery series called Witch City Mysteries, they are just delightful books and perfect for this time of the year. So if you are looking for a wonderful series to read, you know, they have on television, they have all of these Halloween shows. Well, you need some Halloween books. You need some of Carol J. Perry's books. And those are available at Barnes & Noble, because she was selected to be part of the Kensington Display of Cozy Mysteries, which was really, really wonderful. And a great honor for her, because two of her books were selected. And it just shows what a great writer she is. And then, of course, on Amazon and wherever books are sold. And it's Carol J. Perry and their Witch City Mysteries. And she's an amazing writer. So you'll have lots of fun reading her this month and listening to her when she comes on the program. We'll do a few commercial breaks, and then we'll come back. I have a guest coming up, a really important guest, Nick Stone, who has written a book called Dear Martin. We'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. My employees and I would like to thank you for making MyPillow possible. Years ago, when I invented MyPillow, I thought I was the only one out there with problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I'd flip-flop all night, or wake up with a sore neck or headache. So that's why I invented MyPillow. You can adjust MyPillow's patented fill to your exact individual needs to help you get to sleep faster and stay there longer to get the quality sleep you need. I back it with my 10-year warranty and my 60-day money-back guarantee. And now to thank you, I'm bringing back my best offer ever. Buy one of my MyPillows and get another one absolutely free.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY. P-A-T-Z-I.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I am just waiting for a call-in from New York City with Nick Stone, who has written a book called Dear Martin. And it is a fascinating story that combines in a novel form the main character, who has problems, to put it mildly, writes a series of journal entries to Dr. Martin Luther King, to try to understand his predicament. So we will be talking to Nick about her book, which is a very important book that really, in this time of all of our problems with race relations, it's a fascinating book, and I'm excited that she's going to be on. I love books that include letters, and it's books that do that are called epistolary. So it's a funny word, but I guess it's been popular since forever. They are a series, sometimes a series of just letters, or in this case, it's a third person and combined with letters. One of my favorite, of course, I think, is Dorothy Sayers, where she includes letters in quite a few of her books. I love the books, the letters from the mother-in-law of Sir Peter Wimsey. Those are always amusing and delightful. And it's been a very popular format over the years. Anne Bronte tried it and was fairly successful. Of course, Dracula by Bram Stoker is really just a compilation of letters and diary entries and newspaper clippings and telegrams and even doctor's notes. So it's a nice technique, and it really makes you feel that you are right into the story. And that's why it's a wonderful technique to use. And I now, of course, in some books nowadays, they have a these exchanges of emails. I think that was in that shady book that we don't talk about too much. And there were several other books where they used tweets as part of the ongoing story. So all of these techniques, they're not new. As I said, Honoré de Balzac, of course, in his Letters of Two Brides, has an exchange of letters, and it's been a very popular format for many years, and I do enjoy it. So it's funny, whenever I get a book that includes letters in it, I immediately want to read it, because I feel that sort of that urgency, like there's a letter there. And it was funny when Nick Bantock was on, and of course he wrote the Griffin and Sabine books. And those are all letters and postcards. And as a matter of fact, in the actual format. And if you have not read one of Nick Bantock's books, you really should, because they're fun in that when you open them up, they are there are letters and there are postcards, and you really feel that you are getting sort of snooping into somebody's life. And it's an exciting way to for an author to write a story. And so this is something that Nick Stone has done in this new book that she has just written. And it's really exciting when you think of somebody who comes out with her first book and it is already a big hit. And I'm sure it's probably, I don't know if it has hit the best-selling list yet. I probably will. And that doesn't happen very often with a first book. So it's always so exciting to talk to somebody who's at the beginning of their career. And really, you know, when your first book comes out and it's published by a big house, they give you, you know, the a grand tour kind of thing. And you get a lot of, you have a lot of fun. And I'm so thrilled always to talk to authors who have just come alive sort of as an author at one of these releases, because it's an exciting time in their life. It's a time that they'll never forget, because, you know, over the years, once you've written a book and you start, you have releases, you have, you know, every few years you have a release, but nothing will ever replace that first major release. And so it's exciting that you know, to happen. And I'm so happy that I'm going to have Nick on in a few minutes. I think I saw Big Ed in the control room and he answered the phone. And so I think that in a few minutes we're going to have Nick Stone on. Am I right, Ed? 1 minute, I think. And it's going to be fun to talk to her. And again, remember that if you are, I'm just waiting for her. Remember, if you need a pillow, go to My Pillow and use my promo code PATZI, because it really does support the program so that I can bring you wonderful authors like, of course, Eileen Spinelli, and now today Nick Stone. So it's just it's one of the joys of life is that I get to talk to all of these fantastic writers and learn about and bring them to you so that you can learn how they did it and how they got motivated, or how they got the idea for a book, or just how they kept going when they thought maybe they didn't have it in them, but they found that they did. So it's always exciting to talk to authors, and that's one of that's the joy of my life here every Tuesday, every week. Okay, do we have Nick on? Hi, Nick?
Yes, hello.
Hi, Nick. Oh, I am so happy to have you on. You know, I've been talking about books with letters, because I love books that include letters or journals. And so I was really thrilled when I got this book. Of course, it's called Dear Martin. And I want you to tell everybody a little bit about it. It's a really... it's an amazing story that tackles, you know, American race relations at a very important time in our country. And you've done a brilliant job with this book.
Thank you so much. Well, yeah, it's about it follows a 17-year-old African American boy named Justice. After a traumatic experience with racial profiling, Justice decides that he's going to start a journal of letters to the late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. His goal is really to try and live according to Dr. King's teachings and to record the results in these letters written to Dr. King.
Now, you know, one of the things when you have a book that is geared for young adults, it is so important that you be able to capture the reader without being preachy or without making them feel like you're trying to sort of knock something into them. You have to do it very carefully, and you have done a brilliant job in making Justice a very rich and interesting person to know, and then so that the reader can follow along with all of the events that happened to him.
you. Yeah, I mean, you know, for me as a writer, it's important, especially a person writing, like I deliberately write for a teenage audience, you know, that's who I'm thinking of when I'm writing my books. And I think, honestly, I feel like we do teenagers a huge disservice when we tell them what to think. You know, they, when we hit 13, 14, we get to that point where we start having to make decisions for ourselves. And I really think the most important thing for me in my writing is to just present the information. I want people, readers of all ages, not just teenagers, but I want readers to be able to just take what I put on the page and form their own thoughts about it. You know, is that not the purpose of books? I feel like books exist to present information for us to kind of bounce our own thinking and our own perspectives off of. So thank you for that compliment. I'm glad you feel that I accomplished the mission.
Well, it is really the important thing when you want to capture young readers, because of course, the length is great for most young readers, although, you know, J.K. Rowling did prove that kids will read a 600-page book, you know, but still, this book captured, I think it's just the right length, and it is not a book that says to a kid, you have to think this way. It's a book that opens their eyes.
Yeah, that's really what I'm hoping. You know, there are parts of the book that I present in pure dialogue. So you have the character's name, a colon, and what the character says. There's no commentary. There are no dialogue tags. It's just you're watching or reading. You're literally reading an actual conversation. And part of the reason I present it that way is because I want readers to have the chance to kind of formulate their own opinions. And I want them to be able to see their own perspective, you know, perhaps they have a perspective that differs from the main character's, and that perspective is also presented in the book. That way they see their own perspective, but without, you know, somebody saying, well, your perspective is wrong. So really the goal is to have this kind of juxtaposition of these different perspectives and these different experiences.
Well, I loved it. And as a screenwriter myself, I love the way you did the dialogue. I like that boom, 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 boom. It moves the story along. And you don't need a lot of extraneous stuff. Your dialogue is so brilliant that it tells the story.
Thank you. That means a lot coming from a screenwriter.
Well, you know, one of the things, and I wasn't sure when I was reading the book. Now, of course, I'm a little bit older, so I don't exactly remember those years. But I had, of course, read enough about it. So Martin Luther King, of course, is somebody that I have read and I have some knowledge about. So I was wondering, how do young people know as much about Martin Luther King as sort of perhaps we do?
Honestly, I'm going to say no. And that's another part of the reason I wanted to write letters to him. His teachings have been sanitized a good bit. You know, like if you look around, part of the catalyst for this book was me seeing people quote Dr. King in opposition to some of the protest movements going on now. You know, I saw, oh, Dr. King would be appalled by the Black Lives Matter movement, and Dr. King would never take a knee, and Dr. King would never take a freeway. Like these things that are just blatantly untrue. We have photographs of Dr. King taking freeways, you know? So really, I also just wanted to, like, put his true legacy back out into the world for a generation that might have come to know a Dr. King that's a little more palatable than the one that actually existed.
Well, that's what I felt when I was reading the book. I was saying, okay, she's done either she's very knowledgeable about Dr. King, or she's done some good research here, because I felt that, you know, in schools that they don't teach enough about anything anymore, but they certainly, I'm not sure. You know, you look at a book and you textbook, and you say, well, they give maybe Martin Luther King 3 pages if he's lucky.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I think it is important that you bring, well, to all young people. And I don't think that this book, and it's wonderful, I think, that you have an African-American young man as the main character. I think that really, it's empowering for all African-American children that this is your main character. But I think that white kids should read this book, too, because it's a powerful book.
Thank you. Yeah, and, you know, Dr. King got started at 17. There's a letter from him to the editor of the Atlanta Constitution that he wrote at 17, basically saying, like, we just want to be treated like people who have rights. That's the crux of the letter. And Justice finds this letter toward the end of the novel. You see him find this letter and realize that, like, hey, I'm 17, but this is the same age he was when he kind of got started. And there's this eye-opening moment for him where, like, and this is what I want teens to see as well. Like, you do have a voice. This being young, like, I know people, something I hear constantly when I interact with teenagers is nobody's listening to me. But, you know, I want to empower, just like you said, I want to empower teenagers and let them know that, like, what they say matters and what they feel, how they think, all of those things, they matter because, you know, they're going to be leading this country eventually. And I think we would do well as people who are not teenagers anymore. I'm 32. But, you know, people who are past that stage in life, we would do well to actually sit down and just listen to what teenagers have to say these days.
Absolutely. And I think that this book, I'm sure it's going to be used in schools. There's a little bit bad language, but I think they can overcome it because, my goodness, you know, what I don't know, you know, kids aren't the same as we were even when you were younger. I mean, things have changed. The vocabularies of young people are different. I didn't even know any bad words when I was a teenager. So, you know, but I hope that really they do use it in school and that they have not just black children reading it, but white children reading it and yellow children, all ethnicities should read this book because it is powerful and it does explain, I think, to people the thought process of what goes into, being afraid, sometimes to be judged by just on your color or on what you wear or on things like that.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, hopefully the journal really gives people insight into what this kid is thinking. Because really one of my biggest goals with this book was just humanizing black boys. Because so often you see black boys, you know, people perceive them as threats before they perceive them as children. And that is something that bothers me a lot personally because I have two little boys. I've got a 5-year-old and I've got a 1-year-old. And I know that there's going to come a day when somebody looks at them and they see somebody who's causing trouble, even though they aren't doing anything wrong. So, yeah, I really wanted to show that, like, teenage black boys are just teenage boys. Like, they're just teenagers. They're thinking about girls or boys. They're thinking about romance and college and friends, and they're playing video games, and they're going on long car rides, and they're turning their music up too loud. And, like, these are things that teenagers do. And it should be okay. Like, that should be okay.
Well, I think, as I said, I think because of the way you've written it, it's a book that is very approachable. And I hope that, you know, things have to get better because we certainly can't afford for them to get any worse. And if, you know, the problems between the police and black people, police and white people, I don't know, you know, there are problems. And of course I know that from your perspective, your father is a policeman. So you understand some of the problems of the police too.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yeah. First 23 years of my life, I had a cop for a daddy. And, you know, that definitely informed a lot of the police and teenage interactions in the book. And he was really instrumental in helping me get the cop perspective down. You know, there's so many things that go into people's interactions with one another. And I'm just hoping that, like, if nothing else, people are a little more empathetic by the time they get to the end of this book.
Well, I think Nick Stone, you've done a great job. And I want to tell people that Nick is spelled without the K, N-I-C, Nick Stone. And yeah, the book is Dear Martin, and it's available wherever books are sold. I know it's going to be, I think it's going to be a bestseller because it is a very important, it's a little book, but an important little book.
Thank you very much.
And it was just a joy to talk to you, Nick. And I hope that maybe you can come back when you have, I know that you're so busy because this is the release time and everything is so hectic, but perhaps in a few months when we've had some time to settle down, you could come back and talk more about this book and about race relations in general, okay?
Absolutely.
Okay, so we'll stay in contact. It was just a joy to talk to you today, Nick. Bye-bye now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Now, that's nice. She's really a great writer. When I got the book, I thought, wow, this is going to be an interesting subject. And because I really enjoyed always reading Martin Luther King's works when I was younger, and seeing how she has, obviously she's done some really great research because she has captured a lot of Dr. King's thoughts in the book. And her character, as I said, is wonderful. His name is Justice McAllister. And I hope that you will get this book and read it. And as I said, it's called Dear Martin by Nick Stone. And meanwhile, I have some wonderful guests coming up in November. In addition to David Baldacci, again, he's going to be back on because I always love to talk to him, and Mary Higgins Clark, and a lot of other wonderful authors. And I'm looking forward to doing a Christmas show. So for all the writers out there who have books that are ideal for Christmas, the first week of December, I'm going to do a Christmas show covering all sorts of children's books and any other type of book that is really an ideal book to give at Christmas. Meanwhile, I also want to tell everyone, I think that for Thanksgiving, you should get Thankful by Eileen Spinelli, and also The Book of Joy. Doug Abrams was on the program last week, and he wrote the book, co-authored it with Archbishop Desmond Tutu and the Dalai Lama, which isn't bad, you know, to have them as co-authors. And it's called The Book of Joy, and it is a perfect book to read after Thanksgiving dinner. You can sit around, and whether or not you watch football anymore, you can actually sit and read The Book of Joy together as a group, and you will really enjoy it. And it's a book that you can read year after year, sort of make it a Thanksgiving tradition to read The Book of Joy. So I would like to recommend that. And then just remember that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in an audible book. And I just finished listening to Delia Ephron's book, Siracusa, on Audible. It is a fantastic book. It is one of my favorite Audible books. It's called Siracusa by Delia Ephron, and it's told in four different voices. You will love this book. It's really a wonderful Audible book, and I was just thrilled to read it, to listen to it. So what else can I say? Okay, you just have to say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, and he's going to salute me because I want to salute him. I love people saluting me. So have a wonderful day, and just be good. Find your joy and share it. Bye now.